Welcome to the Raise Up Podcast.
Hello.
I'm Athena.
I'm Charlie.
And we're so glad that you joined us today. We are just here to share our entrepreneurial journey and the things that we've learned along the way through our school of life.
Hard lessons of life, which are easier now. They had to be hard in the very beginning. They didn't have to be hard. We just
decided to make them
our new line. We didn't know what we didn't know.
Exactly.
That's the best line in the world. You don't know what you don't know. So now we have a little knowledge. So we want to share it with you.
Yes. And we have a library of podcasts that we'd love for you to check out at raiseupmindset.com. Or you could answer or drop a question for us on our website. So without further ado, the topic for today is limiting beliefs.
Yeah, I think we all have them. Why don't you explain exactly what limiting beliefs are?
Well, I have an official definition here that I was going to read for everybody. So
I don't have an official definition. I just have what I think I know.
Yes, which he knows a lot, by the way.
I know what
so,
I know.
So they're deeply held assumptions or thoughts that restrict our potential. And I think that that probably summarizes it.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear it very well. Will you say it one more time?
They're deeply held assumptions or thoughts that restrict our potential.
That's a good dead on way. I mean, it's more of a definition why, but yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes we don't realize the potential that we really have. And if we don't really let that out there, if we kind of have blinders on all the time,
yeah,
it's really tough to see everything outside that blinders. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's we all are in a mindset sometimes to protect ourselves and keep ourselves safe. And sometimes that really limits what we're going to be able to do and how far we're going to be able to take our company. And I think we've kind of broken through that barrier a little bit. Like we still take calculated risks, but we're not scared of risk. I mean, there has to be good risk for the reward, right? Am I explaining
that
correctly?
Yes, yeah. Yes. When I think back to earlier in business, the first limiting belief that I think I had to overcome was, I can't be the person who generates all of the income that's coming into my bank account. Like, I need someone else to show me what to do, to help me organize it, kind of like what an employer role does.
Sure.
People just show up, they're given the scope, they understand what the requirements are, they're punching a clock, and they're paid at the end of the week for that.
And that's a safe thing for a lot of people. And
absolutely,
what I'm saying in when we're explaining this, we're not saying this applies to everybody. I mean, let me rephrase that. It could apply to everybody that wants to make it apply. If you're safe in your bubble and your area and your surroundings and you want to keep it that way, that's perfectly okay. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're an adventurous and entrepreneur, you kind of have, if you want to be an adventurous entrepreneur, you're going to have to come out of your bubble, and you're
yes,
going to have to come out of some unsafe areas, because for us to be able to grow, we have to venture out. And if we don't venture out, we're only going to stay in that little bubble, and that's as big as we're going to get with our company. If you have a belief that you can only make this much money, your belief will only take you to that much money. If you have a belief that you can do $10 million a year, you have a goal, you have a thing. Make it an attainable goal. Make your first goals, you know, go higher and higher and higher. But once you do that, your goals become unlimitless. And then you have to figure out, like we are right now, we're kind of figuring out what we want to take on and what we don't want to take on. Like,
yeah,
this is a low hanging level fruit for us, but the money that we make at it is very low too. So do we want to put that money and energy and time into it? Or do we want to do a little bit higher fruit that gives a lot more return on our investments? And then we can go ahead and make better money on that. And is it a time-wise something that we want to take on? Is it going to take so much of our time that we're going to go ahead and lose that, or are we gaining it? So time and money is always a factor.
Absolutely.
And then if it's fun or not too, now, because
yeah,
in our timeline, that's
a thing.
that's a thing too. Now is now we kind of get to do more fun things. We get to kind of pick and choose things. And that wasn't something that came off right away. Like, you know, we can choose our clients now. And, you know, I remember a long time ago, and I can't remember who had told me this, but like, when you can A, tell a client no, or B, fire a client, you're in a good spot. I mean, and when I say that is like, we don't have to work for people that are not appreciative and people that don't want to work with us. We can choose to work with the people that we want to at a point.
Yes.
And if it brings a lot of negative energy and it brings a lot of negativity to it, and even sometimes if it brings good money, is it really that good of money? Or can we work for somebody that really appreciates us, that likes us, that wants to pay us what we want to charge, not a zooming amount, but where we feel that we need to be. And it's a great working relationship. We don't hear from those guys, but every couple of times a year when they come in town, we have dinner with them.
It's and much flowing.
Yeah, it's flowing. It's
a mutually gratifying relationship.
There's no blaming on situations. How can we fix it? So we have a lot of those clients now that we work with, and we've kind of thinned some of the other ones out. We've kind of like, all right, by nutrition or whatever what it is, we don't have as many of those clients that is a lot of hand-holding.
So I think what you're saying is that one of your limiting beliefs early on was that we have to pick everybody. We have 100%. To choose everybody.
We have
We're
iron
sitting, everything.
We have iron sitting on the ground. We have employees sitting around. It's money revenue coming in, because when you are in a belief that you have to take everything on, yeah, and no matter what, you're frazzling yourself. You're burning your people out. They're taking trips. You're probably risking some safety factors in there because we have them working so many hours. But it's in the legal amount of hours, so yes, it's okay. And now we kind of figure out like, hey, okay, this is one of our great clients and they're asking us something out there. We're going to go ahead and go above and beyond and work this driver, maybe an 11-hour day today or a 12-hour day, but he's allowed to work 15 hours in a day.
In our region.
In our region. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go ahead and do that because this is one of our A customers. But then you get the guy that I was at fault for that would call me at the airport and say, I don't have a way to the cruise ship. Would you please do it? And would you discount this? And I'm willing to pay this. And, you know, I had a Suburban sitting out front. I'm like, sure, let's take it, you know, because that's revenue we can take in. But
yep,
the negativity on it and putting that pressure on the driver and time away from his family and then everybody else jumping through some hoops. And then the ripple effect of that, and I call it the butterfly effect, mm-hmm, I apologize, is that now my detailers have to make sure they get that detail clean the next day. Our staff has to make sure that they're monitoring that driver until it comes back. That other driver doesn't get a good 12 or 14 hours sleep like he should. He's getting maybe a minimal at 8 or 9 hours. So the ripple effect of that is for looking for that couple extra $100 making of it. Was it really worth it in that time?
Yeah.
So I guess that's one of my limiting beliefs that I feel like I've overcome a little bit. It's like, we don't have to take everything and everything on. We have to take on the ones that we read to. It has to make sense. It has to flow with us. And even when our partners call us, I mean, like we had one of our partners called us last week and needed help with 6 motor coaches, and we made it happen.
Yeah.
We had a few mishaps on it, but we made it right. We made it happen, and we were able to react right away and make it happen. And that's the way we want to operate.
Yeah. So the moments when you're put in that, I want to say it's not really a crisis mode, but you are selecting those moments when you're in that burst of busyness that you're going to have to hustle a little bit more. And when you are selecting that moment, that it's really maximizing with that relationship. It's worth it financially, and the team's on board. It's like this, it's a different feel all the way around. It's more of this connection and like, yeah, we're going to get this done, and not this, oh yeah, this is going to be hard.
You know, in 24 plus going on to our 25th year right now, that didn't come right away.
No.
I mean, this has come in the last 4 or 5 years that we're really realizing where we need to be at, where we're at. And especially through our pandemic, that really reopened our eyes about who we wanted to work with and what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do things. So please, if you're a company that's 1 or 2 years old and you've got iron sitting on the ground and it makes sense for you to send that driver out and it makes sense for it, it's got to be your own secret sauce. It's got to be a sauce, yes, that you're doing. We're just letting you know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you can kind of start picking and choosing your clients and now choosing them earlier. If we would have had some of this knowledge and really somebody would walk through with us, and there was mentors that we had, people that kind of walked us through things and let us know, but like there wasn't this, there wasn't these podcasts, or there wasn't these YouTube videos that we could really watch as two people that brought a company up from two limos and one bus back, yeah, in 2000 to the fleet that we have is 100 plus vehicles in our fleet.
Absolutely.
And, you know, 265 employees. You would have never told me that in 2000 that would ever happen. We were the limo guys that had a party bus, and that was where our MO came from. So it was just like, as you grow within your company, you're going to find out that there's these opportunities that come up and you want to take advantage of those opportunities. And the limited belief that sometimes, as we're talking about that subject, is we are our limitation. We are our own limitation. It's not the limit that's out there in work and everything else like that. We are the limitation to where we're going to go. And if you can break through that wall and say, I have no limits, I have no things, I want to stay in my lane so I don't get too drifted off. I don't want to own a transportation company and all of a sudden a golf course comes up for sale and I think, wow,
that's an opportunity.
Because they have golf carts and it's in our lane, but it's not, you know. There's an opportunity and it might be great for investments. It might be other partners. You might be an investor into it, but you got to kind of see in your own little lane or what you know or what maybe your partner knows and go with that. And then once you start to branch off to different fingers, let's call it, of your businesses and you have different income streams, one of the things that we're branching off to is STR, short-term rentals, and we're breaking into real estate. So we own homes. We wanted to do it. We had some great friends, Bill Faith, throwing names out there.
Bill and Bria Faith.
Have a great STR program. And they were willing to kind of bring us into it and thought, hey, we can do this. You know, and we have such a great tourism in Alaska that brings in massive people. And even all the hotels we build, they're always running out of rooms and they're looking for places. And what a great opportunity for us to help in that world. And we have rental houses too. So another thing that we get to do is something like that. So
yeah, but that's kind of like a fun aspect. So it's almost like it's a hobby that brings us revenue, but it's not our main revenue stream.
Not at all.
And, you know, you were mentioning like overcoming some of these beliefs, and something really important that you did mention was staying in your lane. And some people don't know what their lane is. And really, it's pick a lane and then start to really learn that craft. So you will find that as you stay in that space, because we have many friends who over the years have dipped into this business and that business and this type of industry. It's like, there are people who just absolutely, they're like searching for something, when really one of the fortunate things that we had was the fortitude to stick with transportation. And I think that we allowed some of the challenges that we faced to just keep us in that direction. Like when we decided to step out of plowing and groundskeeping and then just full fledge with that.
So you guys know the quick story of where we started is we used to be employees of employers. And then there were some opportunities for us to, for me at least, to do some snow plowing. And then I did some snow plowing for friends and I got my own contracts. And then I did lawn maintenance contracts. And then I got into painting because the people I was doing lawn maintenance and snow plowing for needed help with painters. And so it just blew up to these different things. I used to own the ice cream trucks. You're going to laugh about that. I used to have a couple of ice cream trucks, one of the highest yielding companies ever for profit margins, like 300-400% margins in those things. It was crazy. But it gave me the platform and the foundation to start building what I'm doing now. And you guys may have not found your lane yet. Maybe you're still searching for it. Maybe you have some great opportunities to make it. And, you know, you have this, when you're really small, you have these great potential growths that you can do that's really high yield because you don't have a lot invested. But, you know, it's that gray area that's this huge part. And then you have this like really black area where you're making a ton of money or you're making really good money. And then all this other stuff is worth it to get to there. And when I say that is like, and I have to give Athena props on this, is like when we were losing some of our contracts for snow plowing, which we had heavily invested in, we had like 20 or 30 plow trucks. We had backhoes, we had dump trucks, we had all these different sanders, all these different things. When we realized that we were racing to the bottom on some of these contracts because everybody just kept bidding down, everybody would bring new equipment and this stuff, we were like, wow, our margins are not there anymore. And Athena goes, you know, there's nobody really doing transportation in the limo side of it really well. Why don't we just take advantage of that? We have four or five companies we're competing with, not 400 or 500. And why don't we do that? And she had the foresight to see that. And I was the limited belief, like, I have my little empire, I'm going to keep it, I want to give this stuff. And then when we just figured out it wasn't worth it anymore, we really rose the company. I mean, it started rising up fairly quickly. We became the limo people. We became this. And then, you know, kind of just went up from there. Then crew transportation, then contracts with the governments, all this other stuff started coming up. And we're like, wow, you know, this is really a great market area for us to do it. And now being 20 years plus, and I'll say the 20 years into it, is that we really started getting into that black car, getting into doing the limos and the transportation world, and kind of backing out of C&G services and our other companies.
Well, and you know, I think the moral to this story is you don't have to be in transportation to kind of follow along. What happens when you stay in a lane is that you start to get good at that particular aspect of the lane. And then you start looking around and seeing other opportunities. And I think part of that is because you're no longer in crisis mode. And so you're looking for ways to be creative. You're looking for optimization. And that's where I think that entrepreneur that starts out and gives it like 12 months and then they don't see what they want to see and so they hop into another industry, that's the piece that they miss out on, is that you get out of crisis mode, you get a little bit of foundation underneath you, and now all of this creative stuff starts showing up and you really start going, wow, and what else can we do? And I think that's what happened to us with each growth spurt. And part of what I felt like my responsibility was when I started to see those opportunities and we decided to take them on together was now what new capabilities do we need to learn in order to manage this well and to get out of that like burst of busyness, sort of mini crisis mode that bringing on a chunk of work can put the team in. And usually it's building up the size of the team, it's putting more like processes and procedures underneath us, and sometimes it's moving to like a higher system that maybe we didn't want to invest in back then when we only were doing this, but now we need that system to keep us more organized. So I felt like the two of us together, that was really the roles that we played.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we both could see the vision of where it could work. And the thing is, superpowers are the processes, the procedures, the homework on what the systems we need to use, what we're going to need for employees. And I'm the override guy. Am I like, I can see what we're going to do. I could see this working. I could see like the wheelchair contract when we took that on. I could totally see us taking this on there because we already did wheelchairs in vehicles. So just transporting people. But it takes a vision and it takes other people to work with it. And you have to have that, like, okay, we're going to step into something that we don't do a whole lot of. It's in the airport, it's in the grounds, and we're going to take this on. And we know we can do it. It's the first week or two, it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be like learning and figuring out what the nuances. Am I saying that
And
right? Yeah.
also meeting the goals of your clients. Like you have to
Yeah.
be really clear on why they even want you to do this contract. Like
And
what are the problems that you're solving for them and keep those at the forefront. Because if you're not providing the service that the client absolutely is looking for, then what are we doing here?
I think the opportunities, what Athena was saying earlier, is that because of our crew contracts, because we really excelled in that, we really realized the flight attendants and captains only had a limited amount of sleep and times between their trips, and on-time performance was really important. You really have to understand that they look at that and say, wow, they do so well in that. Would you guys be willing? And that was kind of the answer. Would you guys be willing to take on baggage claim? Would you guys be willing to, what's baggage claim delivery look like? Well, we're already driving people, so it's in our lane, as we talk about our lanes. This made sense to us. Now we're going to put vehicles out. We're going to pick up bags 3 or 4 times a day and deliver them out throughout the state. I mean, throughout anywhere we can really drive. And then on top of that, we were already doing wheelchair services for the other ones. Hey, would you be willing to take on the wheelchair contract? Hey, would you be willing to park airplanes? We don't really park airplanes, you know, but these are some of the requests that we get that we ask you because we try to excel in everything that we do and try to do it the best as possible. So people say, hey, I know they don't do this right now, but maybe they'd be willing. And if we taught them, would they be willing to do it? And that's the opportunities you get when you stay in a field, like Athena was explaining, is that we get these opportunities that come to us. Like we didn't even search these things out. I mean, it was crazy. Like the airport come to us and said, hey, would you take care of the smart carts that we have here because we're having a problem with our vendor? Would you be willing? And we're like, yeah, I mean, because we saw the potential of like a $6 to rent a cart. You just have to put them back in there. You have to maintain the machines. It's a
We
great
already had
deal.
team members
We had team members already
roaming
there.
around the grounds,
Airport, I mean, it
so.
was a perfect fit until like actually smart carts. And I call them a smart cart because that's what they are. They blew us out of the water, like bid it 4 times the amount of money that we were willing to pay for it. But we were jumping in their lane. It was a lane that we totally think we could have took on and it would have fit within our business plan. But this is what they do. I mean, they develop, make their own carts, their own machines, everything. And the funny part is this, is I'm trying to call them to be able to buy carts and machines from them. And he's like, we're bidding against you. I'm like, oh, okay, now we got to switch gears. You know, now we got to find another vendor that give this to us. But when you look at them and how big their system is, they knew that business probably well better than we did. And they knew the potential of what they can do in Alaska. And when we looked at the other vendor, it wasn't the potential there. So we thought we had a great opportunity in that. Yep. And I think we'd have done very well at it. I think it would have been good. But the offer was there. That's the part I want to tell you. It's like when you stay in your lane and you work with this group of people, these offers come to you and you're like, that's something I didn't think about. But yeah, that makes sense.
I think that entrepreneurs, they allow limiting beliefs to come in and say, oh, this isn't working, or you're not going to have enough. And or you get around other humans that are, they don't see your vision and they're kind of playing it small and safe in their area. And so they just want you, they love you and they want you to just kind of play it safe and don't take a bunch of risks. And so it's really like this balance that you work with where you're surrounding yourself around people who are encouraging you, who are not using the tagline, well, I'm in reality and you're not, or I'm a realist. Really, you have the opportunity to create exactly what you want to create if you have the ability to step into courage and let go of some of those limiting beliefs. And I think another limiting belief that we really saw our industry working to overcome, and I think early on we needed to as well, is my rates. I can't raise my rates because my customers aren't going to, they're going to leave. They're going to quit me. They're not going to join me.
Yeah, we have so many people in our industry that were so nervous because they were, that was their contract and that was what was keeping them afloat, and they were so scared. And look, we've had some of the same ones in our own companies that we've done earlier in our lives too. It's like, you know, we can raise them, but we can't raise them that much. And should it be this much? But you're talking about your margins, and when your margins, you're playing with your margins, and then is that really your customer anymore? When you can't get the money that you're doing out of it, and you can't, you're just paying your bills and you have a job as an entrepreneur.
You're owning your job.
We're not wanting just a job. We're wanting a company. We want to provide a service. We want to be that extra service parts. And you can't do that if your margins are so tight that you can't afford to buy new vans. You can't afford to pay the people what they're worth. You can't expand your operations to a place that it is. As we are expanding, we went from a shop on 54th and Arbor.
We started with a lot.
Well, we did. John's rented us a part of the lot. And we had limos outside and we wash them outside at car washes. But when we moved in our first building, it was huge for us because we had a place to work on vehicles. We had a there. We had an apartment upstairs. We had offices downstairs. We had places to put people. And we were smaller, 20, 30 people back then in employees. Yeah. And as we grew, we really grew out of that shop, and then really moving over to 100th was huge to us. I mean, 8,500 square foot shop, 5,500 square foot offices. I mean, we had this huge space, 8 acres to use. And then, you know, the entrepreneurship of that is people, can we park stuff on your yard? Oh yeah, park it. I don't care. We have this.
That was another opportunity. That was another opportunity.
Then the opportunities led, which we had no idea that opportunity was even there. We didn't know parking was such a thing. So what we're trying to say is, like, if you're in your company now and you think it's a really good company, you have a great service to offer, look at the opportunities around that and how can you build on that? Don't think that this is all you have. Don't let your limited beliefs be the part of it that's holding you back, because it's usually not somebody looking for a great vendor. All of us are looking for a good contractor. Dale and Mindy, our contractors, we've kept them busy for the last 4 years.
It's not just a building contractor. Like, we're looking to team up with people who want the same thing. They want customers that appreciate them, that pay them what they're worth, and that don't bring drama to the scenario.
But it's the relationship side of it too. I mean, the relationship that we have with them, that we can call them and talk to them about anything. There's no hard feelings. They can bring us back to reality of what we're looking for and saying, hey, I hear what you want. This is probably not a great fit for this. And that's what we look for them in feedback, because that's their skill. That's their superpower, is their building, remodeling, and doing things for this. And then we sometimes go, yep, that makes sense. Thank you for bringing me back. Thank you for doing this. But the relationship that we have them, they haven't had the world go out and look for extra work on things because we are able to keep them and the money they want to make and what they're doing. And they've just built and built and built. And so it's been a great working relationship.
So I want to just circle back to, is there any particular like limiting belief that you really felt like, gosh, this was one, a big one that I had to step over?
Well, I think fuel surcharge. One of those, one of the ones that we were really talking about in the beginning when everybody was not doing it and we were nervous about doing 10%. And I
instead think, of raising our rates, we decided to do the fuel surcharge initially.
Fuel, if you guys remember, it went up to like $5, $6 a gallon. So we were really nervous because when you were putting your rates in at $3 a gallon, $4 a gallon, all of a sudden those margins are. And you've got to look at, we currently in the environment now, we're spending almost $12,000 a week in fuel a week. So having that raise up 20, 30, 40%, you're like, okay, now I'm not making my margins on these that we were doing it because we were expecting it to go 20 or 30 cents, but nothing that was going to go up so high. So when we did it, it was like, okay, what's going to be the fallback? And some people are like, what's this 10% fuel surcharge? But there was so little because remember, we're in Alaska. Everything kind of hits a little bit sometimes differently for us than it does the lower 48. So like lower 48s always have these taxes and all these other things.
Yeah, we don't have any of that.
And we don't have those things. So when people book things with us, if it's $2.99 an hour, it's $2.99 an hour, plus maybe there was a gratuity involved to it or whatever else but it wasn't a state tax, federal tax, airport tax, you know, service rendered tax, hospitality tax, where you don't get taxed, California, you know, 25, 40% of what your things were. I rented a car there and it was $69 a day to rent the car and I walked out at $275 a day and I'm like, how is that even possible? But your guys were taxed to death, so they had to bring the prices down to make it affordable there. For us, when we added the 10% fuel surcharge,
that was a concern.
It was a very big concern of mine of what my customers were going to see. But once we put it in there, like we had like three or four people said, "Hey, I don't really appreciate that and I don't like it." Carrie is one of the people that we worked with that was like, "Oh, we're not going to pay it." I'm like, "Well, it's not a choice." I'm sorry, but fuel is $5 or $6 a gallon. And then we went to our vendors and explained it how bad it was. And then we kind of had a floating rate. If the fuel went up to this, this, and this, this is what your percentage was. If it went back down, you didn't have to pay it. So we still made our margins. But the belief to me was, and then after that, I'm like, well, fuel's going up again. We're raising up another 5% because I was over that limited belief that we weren't going to
lose our business.
We're not going to lose our business because we were just showing them how we were being good stewards with our money. And we were making sure they were getting the level of service they were getting because we didn't have to compromise that. When you're compromising what you're making, what you're doing, you're cutting corners. And like a builder, if you're looking for a good home builder and you're looking for the cheapest price, it might not be your best home builder. Not saying it can be bad.
He's going to meet you where you're...
Lumber is the same price from almost everybody. When you're going to Lowe's, you might have a little contractor's price or whatever else it is, but lumber's lumber, you know? Concrete's concrete. There's hard set prices that these people are making. And if they're going to do it 25% under the other person, are you going to get the quality job that you're looking for and the building that I'm going to live in with my family, my house and everything that I'm going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not maybe millions, am I going to get that same quality workmanship? So when we look for things, we look for a good person that's going to give us a good price and we shop it, but we don't want the cheapest bidder. I mean, and we don't want the most expensive person. We want the best person. And I guess that's
what sometimes it is the most expensive 100%. Person. Sometimes it is. And that's okay.
When I'm going to get my gallbladder removed, I'm not looking. I'm not looking for the Earl Shy. I'm not looking for a Mako paint job. I'm sorry, Renzo. I'm not looking for a person that starts off that they're going to shirt your car for $99.95. I want the best surgeon there is because I want to make sure that that's my body. And I think we have to look at that in some of the things that we do is, we have to have the best person doing the best work for us. When I'm looking for a dental place, I'm not looking for the Earl Shy of that. I want to make sure that my dental work, because I hate doing dental work. I want to make sure I'm getting the best possible. So when you're providing that service and you're giving a high level of service, somebody wants to pay for it. And if they don't, they're not your customer. And that was the biggest thing we had to realize is like, we don't need a nickel and dime this stuff. Our vehicles cost so much money. Our drivers cost us so much money. Our insurance is there. Why nickel and dime everything? It doesn't mean you can't give somebody a good deal. It doesn't mean that you don't bring them in and say, hey, I'm willing to do this. Let me show you what I can do. Then let's raise our prices. You have to build your clientele to a point. But if you're doing the best service possible, you're treating your people good, you're getting uniforms, you're doing well, you will get the business you're looking for in anything that you're doing, IT, whatever you're doing, car washes. I mean, we have a car wash that's in town, and I'm going to talk about this, has taken over the markets up here. And I'm just so impressed. They recognize their A players and give them vests that show them that they're red and they're leaders. They have the other ones that says new trainers. They talk to you, but they're kind to you. They're nice to you. And it's not like we had bad car washes, but when you realize the level of service you get from one, and then you go back to the other one, you're like, whoa, what am I doing here? I
mean, the energy is completely different.
Completely different when you walk in that place. And it's the same building, same things, different ownership. And the ownership believe we can do. And I'm going to go back to my favorite place that we talk about is Bucky's gas station. Holy sugar. A guy made a gas station into a destination place.
Yeah, it's a pretty
The vision
pretty
that man had of like, okay, I'm going to open a Circle K Holiday Chevron, and I'm going to make it the run of the mill, which all those great places are good places.
They do the job. They get you some chips and you get gas there.
You go to Bucky's and it's an experience. When you go to a gas station and I'm like been there for 2.5 hours walking out with $1,000 of the shit we didn't need. But we felt good about it because it was cool. Yeah. The experience was there. Like we, JR and Maria, I'm going to throw you out there. Maria Gaz with Diamond Limousine. They waited for Bucky to come out in his uniform to get a picture with him. The character. Like we were at Disneyland waiting for Mickey Mouse to walk out. And he's like, dude, Bucky's coming out in a few minutes. I'm like, you're effing kidding me. Right? We're going to wait here. We're going to wait Bucky to come out. He goes, dude, this guy only comes out like once a while. And they waited for Bucky and got a picture of Bucky coming out. So that was an experience for them. That was, and you've got to look at what are we doing, guys? I mean, the limited belief of this guy is thinking that I was just going to have a gas station to have hot dogs and things like that. They're chopping up brisket. They have a beef jerky bar that is like no other. I mean, I bought $175 in beef jerky. I have garlic beef jerky pepper, and I'm not promoting them because I get any money for it. I'm telling you that when I looked at that in the entrepreneurship and what that guy's vision was, it opened up my mind to so many different things. Like, holy sugar, this guy took this into it. And it, literally, we would look at them. We'd have to pee or go to the bathroom.
We would wait to go to Bucky.
65 miles to Bucky. I'm like, shit, can we make it 65 miles?
And then there'd be a billboard that said, you can hold it.
And you can do it. And that was the thing that letting them know that you were close to the destination you got to. We passed many other fuel stations that were trying to attract us, but we saw Bucky's as an attraction and they made themselves an attraction. And that, what an incredible company. And I'd love to know the owners and go meet them and talk with them and just their vision, because your vision can be the same as theirs.
Yeah. And you know, it's not just the experience that the customer was having, it's the experience that the team members were having. You could tell that it was this mutual, like, energy of just, they're happy, the place is bright, it's clean. And on the sidewalk there was
signs. It tells them what they're paying,
yes,
and what you can make and what your potential was. And where do you ever see that? Where do you have a sign at your place that says, hey, you can make,
you're so proud of the fact that you pay your employees so well that you can put a billboard sign out to attract others?
Well, there's a line to be a bathroom attendant at Bucky's to be able to get it, because you're making $19 an hour to do it in a BFE town. What I'm telling you, Bucky's doesn't just put themselves in like major cities. They're usually on the route somewhere.
Way out there.
In the middle of nowhere, but people wait to go there. And when you go there at 11:30 at night as we were coming back.
Yeah, and you see the basketball team hovering.
We got diverted from one of our places in Texas. Texas, you never get to go to where your scheduled place is because the airlines can't land there. So they land to another town, and we had to drive back. 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, there had to be 400 or 500 people at Bucky's. And my wife, I'm like, what is going on here? And school buses are pulling up with football teams, volleyball teams. They're getting out in droves, walking in there and buying stuff you couldn't buy. And the store looked just as good as it did at 2 o'clock in the afternoon as it did at 1 o'clock in the morning. So going back to limited beliefs, guys, it's us. Get out of your head. Get out of your stuff that tells you we can't do this. Get into a mindset that you can do what you choose to do and how far you want to go. And once you've hit that plateau, hit a new belief, hit a new level, hit a new target level of what you want to be, and then you'll go up to that level. Make it obtainable goals and something you're doing it. My wife years ago said we were like a $5 million company, and my wife goes, in 5 years, we're going to hit $15 million. I'm like, holy tremoli.
Yeah, I got the, well, I'm,
we put it up on the wall.
Reality.
We put it on the wall so we could see it, we could do it. And it didn't take 5 years. It was incredible. But again, one of my things is like, I always try to be realistic. Let's be realistic. We're growing at a 15 or 20% rate. Are we going to really make that goal where we're there? And are we making unattainable goals for our employees? And what would they look at us if we don't hit that goal? But again, it was us. It wasn't them.
Yeah.
They wanted to champion behind us and get us to where we got to go. And it was me that was saying, hey, we're going to hold back. But now I don't think that at all. I'm like, have no problem. You want to buy that? Let's go buy it. Let's get it. Let's make it happen. Let's, like, we know it's going to come. We know that we have that energy to take it to that next level. And we know that we're going to make it happen. And because that's what we do. And we don't have those limited beliefs. Don't get me wrong. I don't think I could fly. I'm not going to go try and jump off a bridge or something. I think I can fly. But I believe that if I had a parachute, I would land. You know, if you believe that you could do it and you find a way to do it, you're going to make it happen.
You know, and I think a big piece of that is in our previous episode, we were talking about the importance of being in a group. How you combat those limiting beliefs is you surround yourself with others who also believe in the potential that you have. And you are maybe not sharing with your aunt or uncle who are constantly like, oh, don't do that. That's crazy. You're losing your mind. Like, maybe you don't share everything with them. But you have your group that you're like, this is what I'm working on. This is the trajectory that we're headed. And you're hearing, you're stacking on that positivity, and you're doing less of the negative vibe or the negative words that are coming in through like other people that don't see the vision and don't support you. That's another piece to overcoming that.
And I think you'll look in your social groups, you might be the one that is a little higher up than some of the other ones, and they all look up to you, or they talk to you and they ask you a question. That's all great. I mean, we have tons of people that we want to help and get to the
mentorship,
next level and
mentorship,
because people took time and invested into us. But the other part of it is that you have to be around people that are like-minded or above your minded too, because as we are giving down to them, we're hoping that the next level of the people that we're talking to are looking at the potential in us and willing to put time and effort into us because they feel it's the right thing to do too. And we want to get to that next level. And that's where hanging around like-minded people, hanging around people that have the same beliefs as you. I was talking to a couple of business owners just last night and talking about we should have our own little 2020 group up here that we all bounce stuff off and we get together once a month. We get together for a couple hours a day or whatever else it is, have everybody bounce ideas off it. Because when you're talking to some of these other owners that we're talking to, they don't have a lot of people that they can bounce ideas off to and do stuff with, and they want to make sure. So, hey, I know we're running time in this. We want to eventually go into our next segment. We're getting at this time, but hey, thank you guys so much. There's so much more that we can offer you this. Please ask questions. Please ask what you want to. We are here for you. We are taking the time out to, we want to give back to you guys too. And that's why we're doing these podcasts. That's why we're doing these YouTube videos. We want to get a good audience that we can get and help you guys get to your next evolution,
stage.
Your next stage.
Yep. So we'll see you next time. Go to raiseupmindset.com. You can submit questions there, or you can just check out our previous episodes.
A lot of you guys know us. You can DM us too and ask us any messages or questions you have, and we want to help.
Yeah. So thank you.
Bye.